Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, Robert, want to hear a science joke?
Hit me with it.
Nitrous oxide walks up to gold, says, "Hey, you, want to go see carbon?" N-O, gold says.
Oh, that was a...
That. I just love it.
That was a good one. Took it to the elements with that joke.
Yeah. We're going to have to do a podcast on the periodic table, I think, one of these days.
Yeah, I think we had a request for it.
That joke comes to us compliments of Facebook Zach. And you can send us all your bad jokes. We love them, clearly, on Facebook. We're Stuff from the Science Lab. Or you can always tweet us your bad jokes, too. We're Lab Stuff over on Twitter. But to get away from the periodic table, today we're talking about SETI. Again, and in particular, one event in SETI that you guys may be familiar with.
Yeah, we're talking about the WOW signal here, right?
Yeah. So I was inspired to do this podcast because there's a pretty cool event that happened in August called SETICon.
Yep.
And this was
August. A convention, right?
Yes.
Like DragonCon and
ComicCon, yeah. Which you were just tweeting about the other day.
Yeah.
So it was organized by the folks at the SETI Institute, and that's one of the big ones, the big kahunas when it comes to SETI. You know, you have people like Frank Drake there, he of the Drake Equation, Jill Tarter. She was, of course, the model for Jodie Foster's character in Contact.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Shostak is one of their big people there, one of their big researchers. And so they had some pretty cool events, but there was an interesting debate that arose out of SETICon, and we've covered this before.
Yeah, most of this... comes out of some stuff that Stephen Hawking said in the recent, and I think had been saying already, but then he said it on a Discovery documentary series about the universe,
right,
Stephen Hawking's universe.
Yes. Yeah.
And so suddenly, and I think it was like I say, it was one of those news weeks where there wasn't much to report yet. We hadn't had an oil spill. That was like a week off. So they're like, whoa, Stephen Hawking is saying that aliens want to destroy us. Let's sex up the headlines and have a field day with this. So,
and you guys might remember we did a podcast that covered some of this ground. And right, like Robert was saying, it was just Hawking was theorizing, well, yeah, if there's intelligent life out there, maybe these life forms might be inclined to harm us and take their resources.
Yeah, his whole thing was like, we are the model that we by which we can try and understand what alien life would consist of. And if they're anything like us, they're probably kind of jerks. So maybe we shouldn't meet them. That was essentially it. I mean, it was.
That's kind of bleak.
He makes it a lot more elegantly than I do, but that was it.
But you know, I mean, not indeed he does. You did it. You did him justice. You did Hawking justice.
Yeah.
So the debate that is coming from this convention and that we've had all along is: do we actively try to communicate with extraterrestrial intelligence? What's the benefit?
Yeah, like, what are they going to come and do? They're going to come and share their technology with us and you know, be super beneficial. Or are they going to conquer us? I guess the ideal, I mean, a lot of it is just based in curiosity, you know?
Yeah.
The universe is vast. It you know, spans essentially forever as far as our minds can understand it, or grasp it, you know? And so what's out there, you know?
Well, curiosity, of course, being the predecessor of innovation and mm-hmm. exploration and all those good Asians that we like to do and that advance our civilization too.
Yeah.
So, if they have the technology to receive our message, you know, if we're actively broadcasting one of those foolish things, like, did you hear about the instance where that social networking site Bebo
yeah.
was sending hundreds of user-generated text messages and, you know, pictures and all this stuff?
Yeah, that was they covered that in the This American Life episode
yeah.
Contact. Yeah, and there's just all sorts of idiotic things being sent out there. But they were basically like,
and also some heartfelt things. It wasn't all
yeah.
idiotic, but a lot of kind of silly things
yeah.
that were being beamed to a planet 20 light years away, an exoplanet.
Yeah, maybe it's because I like to think maybe it's kind of like a conspiracy theory thing. You know, it's kind of like the NASA whoever found out that there's some danger over there. There's some sort of like horrible intergalactic civilization. They're like, whoa, we've got to convince them that we're really dumb because otherwise they're going to come and harvest our brains. So let's hook them up to our social networking. You know?
They were trying to fake them out. Interesting.
Yeah. That's my theory. Because earlier, you know, the earlier method, like with the Voyager missions and all, was to, you know, A, send naked pictures of ourselves, but also, you know, be like, look at us. We understand math and you know, that we have this grasp of science. And trying to convey that we're nice, upstanding members of the neighborhood and that we should be invited over to dinner sometime, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so whatever your stance is on sending messages, we really have been sending messages indirectly pretty much ever since TVs and radios have been around, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like we've, in contrast to like sending out a polite message to the neighbors, it's like we've had our windows open with the TV blaring. Literally, with the TV
yeah,
blaring.
Yeah, for 40 years.
Yeah.
And now the neighbor is finally coming over and
yeah.
bringing a pan of brownies and, you know, some music.
Yeah, there's a great Futurama episode where the aliens come to invade because they've been like, this takes place, you know, like far in the future. So they're just now watching an Ally McBeal-esque show and they're addicted to it.
I can't believe you just mentioned Ally McBeal.
Yeah. I forget, it was called like Single Female Lawyer or something, the name of the TV show.
Yeah.
So suddenly the signal is interrupted and they're like, what happened to the rest of the, you know, series? And so they come to invade Earth because they want to find out how the series ended.
So let's do a quick reminder. I know you guys know this, but of how we conduct SETI on Earth, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. It's pretty simple. Basically, we just listen and we watch.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting in that there is a lot of argument out there over whether we're listening and watching for the right stuff. Our method so far has really been to concentrate on collecting the radio waves emanating from space.
Yeah, we often use radio signals as a benchmark for a civilization's technological achievement.
Right. So there are some people like cosmologist Paul Davies who are saying, hey, maybe we should be checking out some pulsars. Maybe there are some civilizations out there saying, listen, that pulsar, we're making it flash like a beacon. How come the civilization isn't getting it? It's so obvious.
Yeah, that would be like a type 2 civilization.
Oh, right.
Or type 3.
So we look and we listen, and we're basically listening by eavesdropping on any radio communications coming from beyond Earth.
Yeah, we're trying to hear their TV shows, their lawyer shows from some distant point in their past.
So the basic instrument going on here is a radio telescope in the search for SETI. It collects radio waves from space, and because the cosmic radio waves are weak, the telescope collecting dishes are really large. And
yeah.
You guys know this if you've seen Arecibo in Puerto Rico or pictures of the now defunct Big Ear in Ohio. And it's
yeah.
actually Big Ear that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, these things tend to look more like landscape than something we've built. You know, it's like just huge, huge telescopes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can survey these enormous chunks of the sky, one at a time, those chunks for signals. You can take mm-hmm. this sort of wide field approach. And it lets the telescope cover the entire sky at a low resolution in a short period of time.
Yeah.
So you're packing all this information in. But you know what? You're not getting particularly quality information. So you do pick up a signal. Well, you're not going to know precisely where it was without a high resolution search. And then you know what? What if it doesn't repeat?
Right. Then you can't, because that's like we were talking earlier, repetition is key in science. You
Indeed.
Know? I heard something interesting. I want to hear it again so that I can start analyzing it.
And you can also do a targeted search, right?
Yeah. And this is focusing on a limited number, like 1,000 to 2,000 of the sun-like stars out there for extraterrestrial signals. Targeted search allows for a more detailed investigation of a small area that we think might be probable location. So in other words, it's like it sounds, a targeted search
yeah.
instead of a wide search. It's like, you know, it's like when the police decide to search an individual house instead of canvassing the neighborhood.
Yeah, because they already have some suspects in mind.
Yeah, yeah. They have some intel that they're going on. So, and the idea here is we might have intel to go on because we're saying, oh, well, this particular section has the potential, more of a potential to have a planet in it that life could have evolved on than this like empty area of blackness.
Another thing to bring to the table is that our knowledge of exoplanets out there is growing every day.
Right.
I mean, we know of hundreds.
Yeah. So, yeah, the intelligence is improving, so we're getting a better idea of where we should be aiming these targeted searches.
And in fact, that's what Kepler's been out there doing, too, hardworking
yeah.
Kepler. So today we're pretty much interested in one particular radio telescope by the name of Big Ear. Big Ear is pretty famous as far as radio telescopes go. That sounds kind of funny.
Yeah. Like I was trying to imagine like one of those teenage magazines that you see in the grocery store.
Uh-huh.
And it'd be like the cover is like something about like a heartthrob and then like top 10 radio telescopes and like teenagers are going crazy for them.
Right. So Big Ear was in Ohio. It was Ohio State University radio telescope. And to paraphrase one of our old freelance writers, Susan Nasser, who wrote about Big Ear, Big Ear looked kind of like a shiny parking lot. It had a wall that was sitting on either end, and there was one wall that faced the sky to collect these radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
And the waves then traveled over the ground, which was covered with a sheet of aluminum to preserve the signals, block interference, good stuff like that. And then they traveled to the other wall, which was curved, and it sent the waves to a receiver. And eventually all that handy information wound up being printed out at a computer.
Yeah. They're kind of big eyesores, but they kind of have to be to do their job.
Well, so it's kind of sad. Big Ear is no longer there. Big Ear, it went online in 1963. In 1973, it began searching for radio signals. But since Big Ear has been in service, it has now gone defunct. And I believe it has been replaced by a residential development in Ohio, which I think is really sad.
It would have been more ironic if it had been replaced by a parking lot, you know.
So yeah, 1973, Big Ear begins its work. It's very serious SETI work. And one night, a couple years later, we get something pretty interesting going on.
Yeah, this was back in August 1977, more than 30 years ago.
It's a hot summer night.
Yeah. They had Big Ear basically just to scan the Milky Way for some sort of a signal. And it got one. A really
strong signal.
Yeah.
And it was long, too.
Yeah, 1 minute, 12 seconds?
Yeah. So for the 1 minute and 12 seconds, the waves were in the telescope search beam. The signal was strong. It ranged from 5 to 30 times the background radio noise that radio telescopes regularly pick up. So that's an interesting thing to note, right? There's a lot of space is a noisy place,
mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of a window that you can listen for. And so this was stronger than the background noise out there. So that was pretty interesting.
So yeah, the signal was amazing. And so, of course, we kept searching for it. Like I say, repetition. We wanted to hear it again. We didn't hear it again. We have never heard it again.
Yeah, that's often the case with
yeah.
these signals and the WOW signal, as this would soon be called. Because days later, a professor at Ohio State, a guy by the name of Jerry Emin, he saw the printout from Big Ear's computer. There's no one around to talk mm-hmm. to poor Jerry. And he circled the sequence from the night Big Ear picked up this unusual signal. And he wrote,
WOW! Exclamation point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so a professor was teaching astronomy and electrical engineering at OSU. He'd worked on Big Ear's project. In fact, he's so devoted to Big Ear and the telescope's work that after funding was slashed and he was let go, he came back as a volunteer.
Wow. Because he's kind of like that dude who, like, you know, it's like you see a ghost or something for, you know, and then you're like, you spend the rest of your life sort of like trying to figure out what the world that was.
It's like, yeah. Well, I think he has in this case. I really think he has because the WOW signal was huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, why was it so huge? Why was it so remarkable? And why couldn't it have just been some object in space? I mean, because we know that there are a lot of natural objects like stars and black holes, and these emit radio waves. But on WOW's line of sight in the sky, there were no astronomical sources of radio waves at all. So WOW did hail from a spot near Sagittarius A, which is a pretty big source of radio waves at the center of our galaxy. But WOW's line of sight that night in the sky, it didn't match up. It traced to a different line of sight than this region. And so really the conclusion that we drew was of all the sources known at the time, WOW did not seem to come from a natural object in space.
Which would mean it's like Sherlock Holmes said, right? Once you've ruled out all the natural, then you have to worry about the unnatural.
Yeah, so, us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, us.
We're unnatural.
Or aliens. But yeah, first us. Could it have been us?
Okay, well, so yeah, interesting. The radio signal was narrowband, meaning it ranged over a few frequencies, unlike most of the natural radio sources in space, whose emissions tend to range over a huge number of frequencies. And yeah, like you were just saying, could it have come from us?
Well, yeah, we send a lot of stuff into space. So there is the argument that it could have come from some sort of, Earth-produced instrument, a circling satellite on a probe, on a program course through the space could have sent the radio waves. Has it sent it back to Earth?
Well, no. The Big Ear group was good. They did their homework. They did their due diligence. Mm-hmm. They checked their list for instruments in space at the time.
Yeah, because it would have been disappointing if they were like, oh, that was just something bouncing off of a satellite.
Right.
Know? And that would have made kind of sense, you know?
Well, they didn't find any. They checked their list for all these instruments. They didn't find any that were in WOW's line of sight. They made a couple calls, see if they missed something. Nothing turned up. Besides that, we usually send instruments to investigate moons and planets in our solar system, and the signal came from a plane apart from that plane, which I realize is kind of tricky, but it wasn't.
Yeah, again, it's not, if it's bouncing off of something, it's not bouncing off of anything that we sent up. So
then again, you also have the fact that man-made transmissions weren't allowed at the 21 centimeter radio wavelength that Big Ear was listening to.
Right. So not only is there something weird out there making radio waves, but it's breaking the law.
It's breaking the law.
Yeah.
And then, like Robert was saying just a little bit ago, there's this later idea that was floated that maybe, in fact, the WOW signal was a radio wave sent from Earth that ran some space debris, got reflected back. But again, they ruled it out. They thought that the pattern didn't quite seem to match up for that scenario. Which leaves, of course, extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
When you rule out all the other scenarios, like you're saying.
Yeah, then you just go with the unnatural. And so we haven't had any kind of repetition on this, so it continues to be a mystery, and people continue to throw out the theories. And who knows, it may be one of those things that we'll never really have a firm answer to.
And the WOW signal is by far not the only signal that we've never been able to explain. The vaunted SETI researcher Paul Horowitz, who works out of Harvard, has picked up, legend goes, 37 signals that he was never able to explain. Much in the way that we dismissed all of these factors as causing the WOW signal, he's done the same in an old paper.
Right.
So the signals are out there.
And then there's also Gloop, right?
Oh, Gloop. Yeah.
Strickland
wanted us to mention this one. And this isn't so much an extraterrestrial signal, but this was a funky signal that was picked up underwater.
Yeah. And I think, Strickland and other people like to make the claim that it was H.P. Lovecraft creation, the god Cthulhu.
Yes, Cthulhu.
Yeah.
And, on which we have an article, by the way. Have you read that article?
Nah, I don't have to. I'm all up on that stuff.
Okay.
So that Cthulhu article is really aimed at people who really aren't as into Lovecraft as I am.
Like, perhaps I should read the How Cthulhu Works article.
Well, my theory is that if the Gloop signal is Cthulhu, it's because Cthulhu is really ticked off at how overblown he's become in popular culture and is particularly irritated about the plush dolls you can buy.
Right. So the Gloop signal was picked up by one of the buoys out there, placed, I think, by a naval body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was picked up by the sonar equipment, and it was said to be so deep and that it could not have been produced by any animal that we know of. okay, fine. It wasn't animal produced. Well, maybe it was produced by something, some rumblings within the inner earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot in the inner earth that we don't completely understand. So that's completely feasible.
Yeah, so that's gloop for you, Strickland. Yeah.
Or ancient, you know, squid god living on the bottom of the ocean.
Very scientific of you,
but here's
Robert.
Another Lovecraftian connection. Maybe the wow signal is actually Azazoth.
Yeah, so what do you guys think these signals are? We're always putting the call out to write in, tell us your thoughts. We'd like to hear what you think about wow.
Yeah, and while you're at it, yeah, check us out on Facebook, where we're Stuff from the Science Lab, or on Twitter, where we're Lab Stuff. We'll update you with all the stuff we're writing about and podcasting about.
Hey, so we'd love to hear what you guys think of the wow signal and other SETI phenomena out there. So send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
Yeah, and be sure to check out our Facebook and Twitter accounts as well. On Twitter, we're Lab Stuff. On Facebook, we're Stuff in the Science Lab.
And there's always howstuffworks.com, where Cthulhu awaits you. So that's all we got for today. Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.